is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, hoop heads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish home machine. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Stan Johnson, head men's basketball coach at Loyola Marymount University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel, and we are jumping on to recap Game 3 of the NBA Finals. First thoughts?
I don't remember what our predictions were, but we both predicted Milwaukee to win this game. That was before we knew Scott Foster was refereeing it, because you know he's been allegedly Chris Paul thinks he's not a good referee, which I mean. Scott Foster is always, when I think about questionable refereeing games, Scott Foster often, I don't want to say he's Tim Donaghy 2.0, but kind of seems somewhat suspicious. However, I don't think the refereeing ended up playing the end game result in this game. It was ended up being like a 20-point, I mean, it was over after the third quarter. I will say, you know, I know the Bucks were in control of the game in the first half, Mike, and it got to the start of the second half. And I'm sure you didn't feel comfortable, right, at the beginning of the second half? Did you feel comfortable?
No, not at all. I didn't feel comfortable at all in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone felt super comfortable until that huge run at the end of the third quarter. I think after it got to that point, I felt like it was over. And, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I didn't really pay much attention to the fourth quarter because it was over.
But I mean, it went from 82-76 to 98-76. So when you end a quarter, especially a third quarter on a 16-0 run, things usually work out pretty well for you, and certainly did for the Bucks tonight.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, Giannis played really, really well. You know, Holiday wasn't as atrocious, I guess is the way that I'll put it. I mean, he was better tonight, right, Mike? He was better.
Oh, he was way better. He shot the ball well.
And he only by my count, he only missed one layup. I don't know if it was more than that, but I feel like I only saw one layup that he missed. And Middleton played well, all around game. He didn't shoot the ball. I mean, he's 6 of 14 for the field, but he had three threes that were huge. He had three. Like, I feel like all three of his threes were close. I thought P.J. Tucker played well. He's limited offensively, but I will say,
just looking at the box score, the fact that he had two offensive rebounds seemed like he had way more.
He was deflecting a lot. He was, you know, he only had three rebounds in the whole game. I feel like
that's
he played,
what I'm saying.
And I, like, once again, Brook Lopez, I don't quite know what they should do with him because he's not playing to what he should be playing in this series. And I think, Mike, you tell me if you agree with my statement. I think Ayton being in foul trouble is really what did them in. In the end game, because he was playing so well, and then he got in foul trouble, and then they fell way behind at the end of the second quarter. Then in the third quarter, he got his fourth foul like almost immediately. When Giannis went to the lane, and he got his fourth foul, he had to sit out. Then he had to sit out when he got his fifth foul. So I just feel like, I'm not saying that Ayton's the game completely hinged on that, but I will say I think that it definitely had a deep impact on the game itself. Agree or disagree?
I agree in a couple different ways. One is Ayton's probably their best defender against Giannis. I still don't think they have any answer for Giannis, but at least Ayton can provide some resistance, especially on the offensive boards. When Giannis is getting guarded by Cam Johnson or is being guarded by Crowder, you just see that when a shot goes up, he just goes inside, crashes the offensive boards, and those guys just don't have the size to deal with them. So when you take Ayton out of the mix, and then you have to go to Crowder or you have to go to Cam Johnson on him, that just doesn't work. And then, you know, the fact that Dario Saric is injured means that Frank Kaminsky has to play some minutes. Frank Kaminsky played, I think, 15 minutes tonight, and he was minus 12 plus minus. Sorry, he played 14 minutes. So he's minus 12 in those 14 minutes. I mean, that's huge when Saric has been the guy in that role most of the year, and certainly most of the playoffs, and now you're relying on Kaminsky. So, yeah, Ayton getting in foul trouble, I mean, that was something that you heard people talking about in the first two games, that Ayton was able to avoid getting into foul trouble, and it just becomes even more important because of the fact that Saric is out with the torn ACL, and now you got to play Kaminsky. And as we saw tonight, I don't think you're not going to win those minutes if you're Phoenix with Kaminsky on the floor. You're just hoping to maybe tread water, and tonight they couldn't even tread water. So Giannis is going to feast on whoever they put on him. I texted you during the game. He's just taking it to an all-time level, and we can get into his performance in a little bit, but he was obviously just phenomenal and did everything that you wanted them to do. And then that goes to...
And then he was hyperventilating, too.
Yeah, well, it's weird. I mean, again, the substitution patterns with him tonight were odd. There was the moment in the first half where they got up eight, and then they came out of the timeout, and Giannis is out. I'm like, this is their chance that you could bury them. And then they kind of still went on a little run to end the half.
Yeah.
I think they outscored the Bucks, or they outscored the Suns.
I think they pushed it to 13. I think.
Yeah,
right?
they maybe outscored them like 6-2 while Giannis was out, and then Giannis came back in like a minute and a half later, and then they closed the half and ended up 15. But the other thing that goes along with Ayton, and you mentioned Brook Lopez, and you don't know what to do with him. I think the one thing that you see when Lopez is not in the game, or it's weird because we talked about last time, hey, get Lopez down in the low block when he's being guarded by, again, Jay Crowder, when he's being guarded by Kaminsky, or when he's being guarded by Cam Johnson. But the reality is, would you rather have Brook Lopez posting up at this point, or would rather just get the ball to Giannis and let him kind of back his
Giannis,
way down?
There were two possessions that Giannis was clearly frustrated they weren't getting him the ball.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different – he's taken it to a whole new level. I mean, he really has. I mean, I don't remember ever regular season, the last two playoff runs, I don't ever remember seeing him clap and point and just kind of demand the ball. And then, not only that, but when he gets it, he now, it seems like he knows what to do now. Like, he's figured out that, look, I can't just be facing up on a guy and doing my little moves and then shooting a 12-footer. It's like he's determined that I got to get to the rim. I got to get to the basket. And when he puts his back into somebody and then just kind of backs his way down and shoots that little jump hook, like, I expect that thing to go in almost every single time. And then if the guy gets up on him, like Crowder tried to a couple times, he just blows right by him for dunks, and he's at the rim before the help can even get to him. He's really, I mean, they flashed this, obviously, the statistics during the game that he's the first player to have a 40-10 since, what was it, Shaq, I think. And he's one of only, no, maybe LeBron had back-to-back 40-10 games. And There's only four guys in the last 25 years that have done it. I mean, what he's done in these last two games, and then when you consider the scope of what he's come back from in terms of the injury, I mean, he's been unbelievable. You could not, if you're a Milwaukee fan, you could not ask for anything more than what this guy's giving you tonight. He makes free throws. So it was an incredible Giannis performance tonight. And yet, I still, like, just like the first two games, this was kind of a weird game too, because there's just some weird statistical anomalies when you look at what was going on in this game. So Crowder goes 6 for 7 from three. I mean, every time he shot it, I expected it to go in, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Crowder offensively was really good. Then you have the Booker thing. Like, why is he done at whatever? I mean, he may not have even played at all in the fourth quarter. That was weird.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I missed it. They asked what's his, Monty Williams, about him after the first quarter, and he said, oh, he'll be all right. Did he get hurt? Did I miss something in the first quarter? Like,
I mean, he played poorly. I mean, he didn't shoot it well. He was like 1 for 8, I think, in the first quarter. But it's weird that he would have as poor of a game. So he shoots 3 for 14, 1 of 7 from three. That game's over. So granted, maybe you're trying to get the guy rest, but do you really want to not play him, let him sit there and kind of stew for the fourth quarter, and then have the taste of, I was 3 for 14, that's what he has to sit with for the next 2 or 3 days until they play again on Wednesday? Wouldn't it have made more sense to play him 5 minutes, see if you could get him going a little bit, even if it's a blowout? Maybe Milwaukee's eased up. Maybe he gets a couple easy looks for three and he knocks him in. And now he goes into game four feeling a little bit better about himself. I don't know. To me, I don't think I've ever seen that. It'll be interesting to see if it is a good move or a bad move, right? I mean, I don't know. Yep.
I don't know.
I've just never seen it before, where you throw up the white flag with one of your guys who's clearly one of your two best players, and he doesn't even touch the floor in the fourth quarter. That was very, very strange to me.
Yep, I agree. I completely agree. I don't know what was going on there. But once again, I'll be honest with you too. I didn't even notice, because I didn't even really watch the fourth quarter, because I knew the game was – I felt the game was over. So I kind of was tuned out, to be honest with you. As far as, like, what else do you want to say about Giannis? I mean, he played really, really well. He made his free throws tonight. I like that there were some Phoenix fans still in the chanting the numbers thing, but it was – you could faintly hear it. And then
we said it all season, right? I mean, if he's going to make 75% of his free throws, I mean, good luck. All right. I mean, good luck. I don't know what you're going to do with the guy.
Yep. Yep. Other than that, go ahead.
They have no answer for him. I mean, they don't, even when Ayton's on him.
I mean, there's not many there's not many teams that have answer for him. Right. I mean, let's be honest.
You're relying on the collective ability of the team to kind of wall it off and not let him get to the basket.
I do want to say one thing, though. Giannis needs to stop with that jump hook, because he doesn't make it. When he gets down in that paint, he should just dunk the ball. Why is he fading away doing that little nonsense? Like, that's not him.
No, nah, I like the jump hook, man.
Well, I don't know what the stats were on that, but I felt like he missed one or two of those tonight that he should have made. I don't know.
He did. But when he backs down there, like, that's a shot. One, it's unblockable. I mean, nobody's blocking it. So he kind of gets in there. So he really has three moves now in the post, where if you go back to some of our discussions in the middle of the season, we're like, I don't know what his signature go-to move is. And so the three that he has are, he's on the left block, he backs the guy down, and he shoots that little jump hook into the middle with his right hand. So that's one of the moves. He's got the straight fadeaway, which, again, most of the time he's shooting that on the left block, turning towards the baseline. And then he has the sort of Dirk Nowitzki fadeaway, one leg, knee up in the air shot that he goes to sometimes. And those three moves have become pretty reliable, again, compared to what I would say he's been like in the regular season. And then I think a big difference for Milwaukee tonight, and it, to me, what was really important was that, yeah, they had to get stops in order to keep Phoenix from getting points on the board. But when they get stops, it also gets them out in transition. And when you put Giannis out there in transition and the other team is backpedaling,
his steps are just so long, and he's gotten so good at that Euro step and taking the long stride and getting past a guy and just being able to finish at the basket. They're pretty lethal in transition. If he does get stopped, they got guys spotting up, and tonight they made shots. It was getting them out in transition, I think, was a big key for Milwaukee's success tonight, was they were able to generate some easy baskets. And again, Jrue Holiday shoots 5 for 10 from three.
Yep.
I mean, some of the shots he took, I'm not sure that they were great shots, shots that you'd want him to take in an ideal world. But when they go in, everything looks a lot better. And Middleton was, I would say, average. And I think most people probably thought that the Bucks aren't going to win if Middleton doesn't have a great game. And today I would say he had an average game. I mean, he did enough, but I think the Holiday 5 for 10 offensively really made a huge difference for Milwaukee. And they're a better team when Holiday's playing confidently and it can at least make shots. He at least quieted the Eric Bledsoe talk for at least one game.
Yeah, I agree. Eric Bledsoe was atrocious. At least Jrue Holiday is serviceable on the defensive end, because Eric Bledsoe wasn't even like that. And he's
way more than serviceable.
Phenomenal. You know what I mean.
Yeah, I know.
Eric Bledsoe, he may as well have a carcass out there playing defense. Jesus Christ. Anyways, as far as Budenholzer goes, I think he did a pretty good job tonight, especially with Giannis having to fade out. I mean, to be honest with you, I don't know that there was many – I'm trying to think game two versus game three, like adjustments that were made. I mean, they shut Booker down and Mikal Bridges didn't play well. But like I don't know that there was any big – because Chris Paul was still in that first quarter. He was still getting to his spot. And I felt like they did a better job later in the game with that. But he was still – I mean, Chris Paul still played a really good game. Would you agree with that? Like, he played pretty solid tonight? Or do you not feel that way?
No. Chris had a good game. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He got to the mid-range, got his shot, shot it over the top of Giannis a couple times, shot it over the top of Middleton a couple times, and he's dealing with Holiday kind of bumping him around all game. So, yeah, Chris Paul was phenomenal tonight again, and he's played three really good games. His first game, game one, was obviously his best game. I'd say he's gotten – I don't know, saying he's gotten worse each game probably isn't really doing justice to how well he's playing. But the first game, game one, was definitely his best game. But I thought he was solid again tonight. You just didn't get anything from Booker. As you said, Bridges goes from, what do you have, 20? What do you have, 27 the other night?
Yeah, 27, yeah.
And so tonight he gets four, doesn't make a three. Other than Jay Crowder, they shoot, if you don't take Crowder in, I think the rest of the team only made three threes altogether. So total, they're 9 for 31. But you take Crowder out of there, and they're what? That makes them 3 for 24. So you're not going to win too often if you shoot 3 for 24. And we talked about it with Milwaukee. Look, if the three doesn't go in, your offense looks a heck of a lot worse. And if it does go in, you know, again, you swing, you know, Milwaukee makes 14 threes. Phoenix makes 9. You swing that and Phoenix makes 14 and the Bucks make 9. And, you know, you're right there. It's a tie game, basically. So I don't know if there's anything. And this is what's, I think, interesting about this series, is that I don't know that there's much more that either team can do differently. I think it really comes down to which team can execute better and which team's going to shoot the ball better on a given night. I do think that Giannis is the one constant that, and I think Chris Paul is a constant. I don't think Chris Paul is going to have a bad game in this series, but I don't think Chris Paul can get to the same level at this stage of his career that Giannis can get, simply because of the size and the age and the quickness and everything, which is even more amazing when you consider that knee injury and what his hyperextended knee looked like in the freeze frame of that injury. What he's doing is just, I mean, it's amazing. But nonetheless, I think that there's not a whole lot of new things and wrinkles that are going to happen. I just think that both teams are going to try to execute what they do, and it's just going to come down to which team can do what they do better. And, I mean, look, I thought going into game three, I thought Milwaukee would win. I think I was trying to remember, you talked about what we predicted. I think I think I had the score, like, I want to say I had it like 123-106 or 123-108, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I had it like an 8. I said it would be a 12-point game, I feel, and it was going to be close until – and then it was going to – closer than it seems. I was wrong on that one.
Although it was – I mean, again, until that 16-0 run at the end of the third quarter, that game was really close. I mean, Phoenix was battling back.
Yeah.
And they had a really good chance, it looked like, to be able to – I felt like through the first 2.5 quarters that Phoenix was scoring relatively easily, that they were kind of slicing up Milwaukee's defense, and Milwaukee didn't really have a whole lot of answers. But again, when the ball goes in, it just makes – it makes all the difference. And when it doesn't, it's tough to overcome that. And I do think that each team – I think what Phoenix did in games 1 and 2 – the way they shot the ball, part of it was just the way they passed the ball, the way they attacked and what they were able to do. And then tonight, I think Milwaukee did some things that made a lot more sense. I think going to Giannis, like there were a couple possessions right leading into that 16-0 run where Giannis had made a couple buckets in a row. And then there was like 3 or 4 possessions in a row where he doesn't even touch the ball. Like there should never be a Milwaukee possession unless it's on a fast break where Giannis doesn't at least touch the ball at this point.
Yep, I agree. He should get it every... He should, like, listen. I'm not saying he's a point forward, but we should almost... He should almost be treated like LeBron, because every time he touches the ball, something good happens. Right? Agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he's figured out what he's good at. He shot a couple of heat check threes, and I mean, he maybe took one little jump shot that you were like, eh, I don't know if I would have taken that shot. But for the most part, he's catching the ball on the wing, he's squaring up, he's attacking, or if he doesn't have that initial attack, then he's turning his back, he's kind of put the guy on his hip, getting him down into the block, and then trying to score. And I haven't seen him do that to this level of efficiency. I haven't seen him do it to the point where in the playoffs it felt like he could be neutralized a lot easier. And it feels like he's really starting to figure out, hey, if I just do these three things, nobody can really deal with me. And then you throw in his ability to screen and get to the basket, and there were some nice passes that were made, and Connaughton had a nice one to him. There were a couple others where he screened, and then he gets positioned on a smaller guy, and then he's just feasting. And when he makes free throws, it limits your ability to just want to foul him. I mean, granted, you're still probably better off fouling him than letting him dunk. But if he's going to go 13 of 17 from the line the rest of the way, if he's going to shoot 75%, I like Milwaukee's chances if that's going to be the case.
Yeah, I agree.
Hey, hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com/teampricing to learn more. That's ARYSE.com.
So I guess, is this a good point to make predictions for a game 4, Mike? Or is there anything else that we need to talk about before we make predictions?
I'm just trying to go through and think about
what else. Do we want to discuss USA basketball?
Yeah, let's get to that after we finish the finals. We can talk about that. We can talk about that briefly. Yeah, I think we can go ahead and make predictions, and maybe in the course of making that prediction, if anything else comes to our mind, we can throw it in there.
Yeah. I think Phoenix is going to win game 4, Mike.
Oof, man, I don't know.
I think it's going to be a close game, and I think Phoenix is going to win because Scott Foster's not refereeing. I think that's a mental block, too. I think it's a mental block at this point. They had lost 12 in a row of Scott Foster games. The Suns this year had lost 12 in a row. Okay? On top of that, Chris Paul career with Scott Foster in the playoffs. Did you see that? That's that? 0-11.
I don't. 0-11. That, right. That's, yeah.
So I'm just saying, I'm not saying that was the reason they lost this game, but it was a mental hurdle, and they probably came into the game. Listen, you knew if Milwaukee didn't come in and they looked like they were dead fish in the water, then that would be atrocious for them. But I just feel like that was a mental block for Phoenix as well. I think Phoenix is going to come back. They're going to make adjustments. They have 3 days. They're going to come back, and they're going to play good, and they're going to win game four.
All right, I don't think there's any way that happens. I think Giannis, where he's at right now, I mean, I expect him to get 40 again. I mean, it's crazy, but I just think he's figured something out that nobody on the Phoenix can guard him. And if he just gets to his spot and either attacks quickly or backs the guy down, I just think that they have no answer for him. And tonight they didn't even get a really great Middleton game. They got a good Jrue Holiday game, maybe even a great Jrue Holiday game when you figure at 5 for 10 from 3. But Middleton's going to have a game where he goes off for 30-plus. And if you combine a Middleton 30-plus game with a Giannis 35-40 game, I just don't see Phoenix. I don't see them overcoming that. So I'm going to say Bucks win game four. It's kind of what I thought would happen coming out of game two. I'm going to say Bucks win that one. I think it's going to be about the same range that it was tonight. I think the Bucks are going to kind of win it going away. But I'll say give me 118-105 Bucks on Wednesday night.
Okay. We'll have to see. And it will be interesting to see. And we'll talk about it. You'll be at Snow Valley.
I will be at Snow Valley. Looking forward to getting out to
Mike,
Iowa.
Mike might jump on. I have someone else lined up to join us. Dan Menigan is going to join us as well. So if Mike isn't able to step away, then
I should be able to step away that night because camp won't have started yet. So
yeah, so we'll definitely have a pod. I don't know what I'm going to do Saturday night yet. If you can't hop on, I might just have to record myself blabbering on and on for 10 minutes or something. But I'll figure something out. But we'll get there. But I think the Suns are going to win, and you think the Bucks are going to win. And I'm going to tell you that Dan thinks the Bucks are going to win since his family's all from Wisconsin, so he's not picking against them. So,
Who's the key role player for Phoenix? Who has the game for Phoenix that pushes them over the top in your mind?
I think Booker's back. I think Booker plays a better game. He's not going to have another bad game. He's got to refigure this out. He's going to be fine. He's going to do it.
He's going to be sulking in his own misery for the next 3 days, wondering why he got benched.
Listen. He's going to play better. I'm telling you right now.
That's fair. All right. I think on the Bucks side, like I said, I think Giannis goes 35-40 again, and I think game four is the Middleton game. I think Middleton goes for 25-30, and that's how Milwaukee wins it. The crowd, I think, continues to carry him. I didn't think the Milwaukee crowd was quite as good as the Phoenix crowd, but maybe that's just because they don't have anybody to count to 10 for. But the Deer District looked hyped.
Well, yeah, that was exciting. It kind of brings back memories of Game 7 in 2016.
It does, yeah. It's nice to see a smaller market team have sort of the same, a Midwest team have success that the Cavs were able to enjoy.
I agree. I completely agree. Okay, really quickly, Mike.
You got to disagree with me on something. What can we disagree about? You've been agreeing with me a lot.
Well, listen, you disagreed with me 8 years ago.
All right. Well, I guess there you go.
You know exactly what I'm referring to. That whole week beforehand, I was wearing LeBron stuff, and you're like, he's not coming back.
I told you he's not coming back. Well, he's back. He was back.
It was 7 years ago as today, Mike.
That's right. I did see that on Twitter.
I was holding Will in my hands when I got the text message, and I started jumping up and down, not realizing that there was poop in his diaper, and I got it on my shirt.
Nice.
Anyways,
good work.
I will always remember that moment. I will always remember it because
it was a memorable moment.
And then that day, coming to Head Start basketball camp, I gave you so much crap that day. I will never forget it. I was willing to
take it back then. So
it was a very good day. Anyways.
We at least agreed about the big thing, right? You agreed. You picked the Suns in game four. I picked the Bucks in game four. And you've got the Suns in the series, and I've got the Bucks in the series. So we at least disagree about something to make this show a little bit more interesting.
You all, this next discussion is going to be interesting. We're going to keep it short. Team USA loses to Nigeria. Now, I want to preface this. Now, I understand this is an exhibition game, and it wasn't like they trotted out all their players because, I mean, Darius Garland played like 7 or 8 minutes.
6-13 he played.
Yeah, so he played some time, and he actually didn't look – he wasn't the reason they stunk when he was out there. He actually – you know, he got a few fouls. There was one that was so ticky-tack. Listen, what they have to realize is they can't complain to officials and the FIBA officials, because the FIBA officials have no allegiance to any of these players. There's no allegiance. They're every 4 years they play with these officials. So they got to realize they can't whine and complain. Not that they can get away with it all the time in the NBA, but these officials have no allegiance whatsoever to any of these players. Right? Would you agree with that statement? Like they can't sit here. There were a few times that they were whining about calls. And that didn't end up, in my opinion, they just didn't look like they were trying very hard. And Nigeria shot the lights out. I mean, they hit 23s. I mean, if you would have told me that Nigeria hits 23s and the USA hit, what, I think 11, 9, somewhere in there. Like, regardless, I'm not overly concerned with Team USA. I mean, a lot of their big players, and you know, we're missing a few players that are playing in the finals. Although I don't know, do I want Devin Booker sulking about Team USA? Do I want Drew Holiday dribbling the ball through the lane? Do I want Chris Middleton throwing up clanks, clanks, clanks? Maybe Darius Garland would be better for the team. I don't know. I'm saying that obviously sarcastically, but I'm not overly worried about Team USA. I don't know did you watch any of the game?
I did not watch any of it.
Oh, I watched the whole game. I watched the whole thing.
Good for you.
It was good. It was on TV. There was no other basketball on. I was going through withdrawals since NBA decided to do this crap, which I think this is why they did the crap with 3 days. I think it's because of Team USA playing. I guarantee you that's why they did it this way. They made this schedule, and then Team USA filled in the holes. That's why they knew they could get away with it. It's garbage, in my opinion. Garbage, Mike. Anyways, okay. I watched the whole game. Mike Brown, congrats on the victory. I will say the announcers are terrible in the game. They are NBC announcers. They are two guys I never heard of before. And if they told me one more time that Nigeria was looking to be the first African team to ever be on the podium, I think I heard that 72 times in the course of a two-hour game. I'm pretty sure they said that 72 times. So... anyways, what's your takeaway from this without watching the game, I suppose?
Yeah, just looking at the box score, Bradley Beal goes, 1 for 7 in 25 minutes, scores 2 points. Doesn't seem like when you're starting two guard, pours in 2 points in 25 minutes, that you're going to have a real good shot at winning. I mean, I expect the team, obviously, to win the gold medal. Clearly, they should have the best roster in the world. Now, I know that Nigeria has 7 guys I read that are in the NBA currently. None of them obviously are big names. None of them are guys that have been all-star type players, but still you have 7 guys who are playing in the NBA. But then you look down the US roster and you have Durant and Dame Lillard and whatever. So, I mean, there's no way we should lose that game, but it's also, you understand that the continuity piece, and you're trying to roll the balls out. They've been together for 6 days or something, probably not even that long. And ultimately talent wins out. But when you're talking about an exhibition game, when you're talking about just getting together for the first time, it's somewhat surprising. But yet at the same time, when you think about how basketball works and how playing together as a team, how important that is, it's understandable. Doesn't seem like it should have happened, but it happens probably more often than we'd care to think that the U.S. loses. We talked about it in the last World Championships where we didn't even make the gold medal game. So who knows? This roster should be good enough to win a gold medal, but would I be stunned if they don't? I wouldn't be stunned.
Oh, I'm willing to say I would be stunned.
It's not Magic, Michael, Larry, Barkley. It's not that group. So it's not that group.
I would be stunned, Mike.
I wouldn't be stunned. I mean, I would be surprised. But if you told me that they didn't win the gold, I would not be floored by that.
I would be floored. I'm going to say it right now. I feel like I would be floored.
All right, that's fair. But
where we disagreed again, finally.
There we go. I just don't think, I mean, granted, your top five guys here are probably pretty good. I'm not sure that your bench is going to be all that good. And I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, so much of it is chemistry and how guys play together and who likes each other and what that looks like. But look, they have enough talent to win, but I won't be surprised if they lose. I really won't.
That's fair. All right. Anything else, Mike? Do we have anything to discuss?
I think that's all we need to discuss.
And obviously we're not recording. We don't have a reason to record on Tuesday night, right, Mike? We're just going to wait till Wednesday since we're
yes, correct.
Yeah, so
correct.
We'll be back Wednesday night with a wrap up of game four, and then Saturday, whoever joins me, game five will wrap up, and then I think then it's not till Monday again or Saturday, and then Tuesday, right? Is that right?
I believe so. Yes, I believe that's right.
Game six will be Tuesday, and then possible game seven. I would assume it's on Thursday, but I don't know for sure because they normally don't like to do Friday night games. But
let's see. Let's look at the schedule right here and see if we can figure it out.
We'll get to game seven.
So we have Thursday. So Wednesday. Then the next game would be Saturday. And then we got to move to the next week so that we can see that schedule.
Tuesday. Game six is Tuesday. Game seven is Thursday.
Yep. There you go. All right. Well, we'll see. We shall see what happens. Thank you for joining us tonight. There is another Hoopheads episode that went out a little few hours before this one. We'll go out with Brian McCormick, who is the author of 21st Century Basketball Practice, Fake Fundamentals, 180 Shooter. Brian has a lot of great things to share on the podcast for coaches in terms of how to design your practices, how to improve youth basketball. And he's got a lot of innovative ideas and a lot of things that coaches can benefit from. So we hope you'll check out that episode as well. If you haven't, please make sure you go and do so. We appreciate you checking us out here with our NBA Finals wrap-up shows. And as Jason said, we will be back on Wednesday night. Hopefully we will have a three-man booth on Wednesday, and then Saturday I hope to be on from Snow Valley Basketball School in the state of Iowa. So thanks for checking us out tonight, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.